You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Simon Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. For this episode, I chat with Davide Dattoli. He's the founder and executive chairman of the edutech platform Talent Garden. Now, for those of you that don't know, Talent Garden was founded in 2011 and has since expanded across the continent and globally, covering co-working, digital skills, upskilling. And while this is all incredibly relevant, what I found to be the most interesting part of the conversation was actually the background he brought through his experience as an investor through the Italian Founders Fund. Now, here he's helped fund Italian founders, Italian companies, companies that want to be involved in Italy. So he really brought that kind of interesting angle to the conversation where he could balance between his experience as an entrepreneur and also as an investor. So I hope you're looking forward to that. But before, a quick message from our sponsor, Fanta.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors. But they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, Davide. Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me.
No, it's our pleasure, really. So I was thinking that before we get started, I'd give you a chance, as I do with all the guests, to introduce themselves and their company and just give us kind of a summary as to what you've done and where you are now.
So I'm Davide. I co-found Talent Garden around 12 years ago. We were starting with a vision of really creating a community for everyone working physical, digital humankind. So really try to inspire and empower people working in digital and tech sector. We're doing this through a business school, training every year around 25,000 people across Europe. And thanks to a network of co-working, we also more than 1,000 startups across some of the biggest markets in Europe, really supporting and with the idea that work and learn will go more and more together in the future.
Okay. Well, I think for people that don't know, you were actually one of the first guests here on the EU Startups Podcast back in 2020. I think it was episode 10. Yes, episode 10.
Wow.
And now we're just past 150. So I thought an interesting point to start this conversation at would be just how you've seen yourself, you've seen Talent Garden, everything you've involved in evolve since you were last on here.
So it was 2020, I think one of the most difficult year for our business because we were starting as a co-working space from Italy, expanding in Europe. 2020, we were having 20 campuses across all Europe. And at one point, WeWork was exploding the year before, showing that the US was a big problem for the business model. And with COVID, everyone was saying, okay, but no one will ever come back to an office anymore. So it was pretty intense year. But we were, I can say, very good in that year to pivoting towards education, moving the business towards the fact that having a community of very good innovators that were living in our co-working space was the best move. If you're able to extract more value than the membership, And so we were developing all our education business also before COVID, but during COVID, we were able to really pivoting. Today, 80% of our business is coming out of education, both B2C and B2B. A lot has been changed. The company is growing significantly, focusing on fewer markets. We have decided to close some of the markets that were unprofitable and try to focus on Southern Europe, Italy and Spain, and the Nordics, Denmark and Sweden, where we have majority of our activity today. And I think this is also something important to remember as entrepreneurs, is that the companies are always up and downs, and you have to be very strong during the moment in which companies are down and keeping the faith on the moment in which they're up, because that does not exist, the trajectory of a big company that is always only up.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I find interesting this, this, you're talking about expansion here, right? And how you've gone ups and downs, you've done different things, you've gone from a co-working company, you've gone from an ed tech company, and you're kind of always evolving. And that kind of makes me wonder about, if you go back to the very beginning, to the idea that is Talent Garden, what was that problem that you said, this is what I'm trying to solve? And then how did that, addressing that problem evolve as your scope got bigger and larger and went into other areas?
I think what it remained the same is really the idea that we want to empower people thanks to skills and network. We believe that people grow when they have the right skills and the right network to succeed. We were doing this in the past, just putting them together in the same co-working space. We're doing today, having also all our courses and programs. Consider that just this year we have more than 100 different courses, 50% of them training people on AI skills and 50% on tech skills overall. So we believe that these remain the same. What really evolves is the type of team that you need. You need different team, what you have to do, opening co-working across Europe, while today you need a lot of people that more expert in learning designs. The sales were localized, now it's mostly centralized. We have a big team in Barcelona that is covering all our sales at European level. You need different maturity in the organization, because the business is different, but I think the vision is the same from the beginning. And I think this is very important when you also pivot. The fact that the problem, the real issue that you have at the beginning has to remain fundamentally the same. Otherwise, the risk is that you're losing your soul. We are doing and resolving the same issue with different tools.
Okay. And this topic you're talking here about skills and the way they kind of change as well, the necessity of them. And, going over your material in preparation for us, I keep seeing future proof. And I thought that was an interesting idea. And it got me wondering about, that's such a great line. It's a good buzzword to hear, future proof, upskilling. There's all these terms. But I was kind of curious as to what you see as skills that actually will matter when you're looking at the future, because we're living through the AI revolution right now. We're in the meat of the digital age. Right. And what mattered 20 years ago doesn't matter now. Maybe, knowing how to do Microsoft Word was a huge skill to have 20 years ago. It's not now. So I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of an insight as to where you see all of that go.
So the reality is that if I think about the last 15 years when we started Talent Garden, everything has changed, but nothing has changed. Where was all the bubble of virtual reality with the metaverse? Now everyone is talking just about AI. Before, everyone was talking about coding as the only way. Today, everyone said that coding does not exist anymore. The reality is everything is true and everything is false. The skills remain the same, remain the fact that you need to continuously learning. You cannot just learn something and try to apply that. Also, if you are a software developer that 5 years ago seems that was the only job that has a future, today everyone said that you will not have a work anymore. The reality is, if you're able to constantly increase your skill set, understanding that your skill set and your mindset can evolve and has to adapt to the current situation, in that case, you can really, succeed. So future skills is what we designed since day one. we will change the skill set because every 2-3 years, the skill set required by the market has changed. But you will never lose the mindset of continuous learning, the mindset of being able to challenge the status quo, being able to challenge all the different activity that is needed to succeed as an entrepreneur, but also as an employee inside a big organization. That is the most important thing for us and is what remains the core of what we teach. Not just a tool, not just something that you need to apply today, but also something that help you to open your mind and to be continue to evolve yourself to be able to react to the future.
Okay. Well, you've touched on a few things actually throughout this conversation, which I think lead to this next question and just what you said as well. But it all gets me thinking about the idea of community and physical presence, because that's something that seems to be undervalued now. And you talk about COVID when, everybody said, we're never going to be back in an office, right? We're talking about AI now where people say it's going to take over your job. So I'm curious, where does that enter into the philosophy of Talent Garden?
I think since day one, we were always thinking that digital and technologies are tools, but people are the basic of everything. And if people are everything, you really need to bring people also physically together. Still today, 70% of our students are studying online. But when we are bringing them physically in our campus, that 30% for us is very important to not just teach them something, but having them experience a real experience. So you need to evolve people. You need to put them in contact. You need to develop their network in order to succeed. And it's way easier to create your network physically than online. Online, you can show with amazing posts on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on X, your skills. But if you want to really create a relationship, the one that matters, you really need to do physical. And that physical element is the life motive between our working campus, all our courses, all our programs that we do with corporates across Europe. We really believe that when you try to learn and improve your digital skills, your AI skills, you really need to stay physically with other people to learn together.
I think we're seeing that too within EU startups. I think in our coverage, we're seeing that a large majority of EdTech, new EdTech, of course, who've been around since 2011, but new companies are kind of dialing into that and finding a middle ground between the physicality of EdTech and also trying to tap into the digital side of things that is natural to everyone now. And on that line of thinking, and I always like to put this forward to our guests because I think it's an interesting angle to discuss, is through what we're seeing through EU startups in terms of your own sector. So I had a quick look at EdTech coverage that we had during 2025. Now, this isn't to say all EdTech funding is what I'm saying here, but just kind of some big numbers and some kind of train of thought that followed Talent Garden. And from what I saw, it was roughly over 50 million in funding euros went into EdTech last year. Now, that's strong activity when we're talking about AI, when we're talking about upskilling. This is kind of the things I was looking at. When you hear that number, where do you see Talent Garden fitting amid this competition from what you're seeing in the EdTech space? And maybe even what kind of evolution you've seen in it since 2011 to now?
So I've seen, during Talent Garden, different waves. And I really learn that the waves are more important than businesses sometimes. From 2015 to 2020, everyone was just talking about co-working. Co-working was the future. WeWork was exploding. Everyone was all over. And at one point, no one were investing anymore into that. From 2020 to 2023, EdTech was everywhere. The amount of investment in Europe was more than 400, 500 million a year. So 10 times what was last year. Why? Because obviously with COVID, everyone really understand that everyone needs skills, everyone wants to invest into education and so on. 2024, 2025 was very down year for education. So the amount invested was 50 million, but it's very low if you consider the strategic future of European workers and the investment into education. It's super small. Why? Because somehow there is trend that overlook companies. The reality is that also if there is lower financial investment in the sector, still, and this obviously bring also less revenue, because if we see many different players across Europe, there was many players that went, I can say, less 50% in 1 year of revenue. And AI now is disrupting many models that are just online. What I've seen is that the reality is that you have to watch the market, yes, because that is what is bringing investment, is what is also bringing some clients. But you really need to have a long-term perspective and long-term view of how, for you as a company, is your perception of how the market will evolve. No one is talking anymore with co-working. We are doing 12 million euros of revenue in co-working still today. Very profitable business, working very well and creating an amazing impact across different sectors. In education, we are doing more than 20 million. Overall, we are over 45 million euro revenue. And we have up and downs in different products, but the reality is people still required to learn and still required potentially even more with AI. The problem, it changed a lot. Before, everything that works was bootcamp. Very short program, 3 months. You can begin from zero to software developer, to user experience designer. Today, no one is hiring software developers. No one is hiring user experience designers. So you need to evolve. We've evolved towards more part-time program that bring and train our student in AI for legal, AI for HR, AI for content marketing, AI for marketing managers. So you need to constantly evolve your product and your strategy. But if you are thinking long-term and you know that people will always learn, people will always need people and physical connection between themselves, your business model is always solid. Also, if the trends are, I can say, up and down, also in contrary to you.
And how does that apply if you're talking about just Italy? Because that's actually something that surprised me when I was looking at data. Italy shows up quite a lot when we're talking about edtech, much more than I think anybody would think. It's not necessarily a country that is known for its innovation when it comes to education, at least not kind of primarily. So I was wondering if that, does that still apply to Italy, everything you're talking about?
Absolutely. I can say we are in a market that is smaller. Consider that 50% of our revenue is Italy, 50% is the rest of Europe. But what we've seen in Italy is that we start our business, but Italy was a very small tech ecosystem. There was just few good success cases, good companies that were starting from Italy. Today, everything has been changed. There are a lot of investment in venture capital in the country. We have bending spools, but it's showing that you can create a company between 20 and 30 billion valuation started off out of a market like Italy. So somehow the market and the shift and the positioning of it has totally changed compared to 10 years ago, where no one was looking at Italy for investment in venture capital. Today is one of the hottest market for plenty of VC across Europe. So I believe that it's not where you start the business, is that today you have to think about the business at least at European scale, both to collect capital and to develop the business itself or to attract talents. But the most important things remain, if your vision is strong enough, you will succeed, whatever is Italy, Spain, France, or UK.
Okay. Well, this idea of scaling here, and to go back a little bit earlier in the conversation, but obviously Talent Garden has scaled, it's scaled successfully. But in that process, I think something that isn't really talked about is what can be hard to kind of maintain as you scale that. Sometimes it's company culture. Sometimes it's the focus of the company. You're going wider. Sometimes it's the speed of what you're doing. You need to slow down. You need to go faster. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit that for people that are maybe thinking of going larger with their innovation, what that was like for Talent Garden.
Yeah. So I think the biggest mistake that we did was to scale internationally too early, very honestly. And I think this is something that for most of the business model is the biggest mistake that entrepreneur made. Obviously, you have the perception and the storytelling that is just about growing international. So when you are, wherever you start, after a few months, also if you're making like a few hundred thousand euro of revenue or a few million, you immediately think, okay, now I need to scale my business because that would be something that investors will really appreciate. The reality is a fake news. It's not true. It's totally not true. I think you need to demonstrate that your model really works in your market. And after, you need to pick one. And my philosophy is, don't pick one another market before you are at least at 10 million euro revenue or a size in which you are really have a strong market structure where you have enough people that if you and some of your best people are moving out of like your market and focusing into another one, the company still survive and goes well. I think the mistake that a lot of entrepreneur makes, and we also did the same, was we had our first product market validation in Italy, and we were in anxiety to say we need to show to investors, to the market, to ourselves, that we need to expand to Spain, to France, to Austria, to Lithuania. And the reality is that that was more for us, but not for the investors itself, not for the market, was not needed. If you were growing more, I can say, maybe also more slow, just in one market, really take a market positioning as a leadership there. And after, at one point, you expand to one market. We did expand into five markets just in 2018. And it was exploding of complexity, because obviously in each market you need to find a country manager and you make 50% of them wrong. You need to find team, and it's always super difficult to attract a talent. It's way more easy to attract international talents towards your city, to your headquarter, than to find other people in other markets. And when you go outside, the rules of the game are totally different, because in your market you're able to find, you know very well the culture, it's very easy for you to resolve problem wherever they come out. When you have a problem that comes out in one market, in another market, and so on, the speed of change of yourself and of all your team is 10 times higher. And so the speed of the increase of the size of the problem became huge and is very difficult to manage. So my experience also from a company that is doing 50% of their revenue internationally is that you need to grow internationally when you are very structured in your market. And I've seen so many entrepreneurs that destroy their business, but went very well in their hometown market because they tried to expand too early.
I think those are words of wisdom. I'm sure people will take note. And I think another element of you that I think is very interesting, is usually a sign of real success when it comes to innovator, is your size as an investor. You're a board member in the Italian Founders Fund, which I think is kind of a rare position, that you've still got kind of feet in both waters a little bit when it comes to the other side. And I was wondering just how sitting on that other side of the table, right, of looking at something through funding, not through raising funding, just how that's changed maybe the way you've approached building your own company, the way you've approached talking to entrepreneurs who are getting started.
So we started the Italian Founders Fund venture capital firm together with some of the 100 best entrepreneurs in Italy around 3 years ago. We have put together 100 million euros, and we are investing in both Italian entrepreneurs in Italy and Italian entrepreneurs outside, or international companies that want to expand their business also in the Italian market. And we have a pretty unique value proposition of having some of the best 100 founders in the market that are investing into your company, bringing network, fund, and skills. Being on the other side of the table, I think, show me how much is important the sector that you choose. As I said before, there is a lot of waves. And if you are in the right wave at the right moment, you can really explode faster than being in the wrong one. And sometimes entrepreneurs are underestimate the wave, how much that is important. Sometimes more the wave is more important, the wave, than the team. When you are already found that company, you need to move across waves. But when you are at the beginning, choosing the right wave is the single most important element, and choosing the right timing to enter in that wave. I've seen many entrepreneurs that were able to start a company in a sector and selling for a very good price just before the bubble explodes, or just before the moment it was not anymore the right one. And if you're good in doing that, you can really succeed very, very well. I think being on the other part is about understanding the importance of waves and understanding the fact that business is pretty all the time the same. Whatever is the sector, the type of problem that you have, the type of issue with team and go to market is always the same, also if the market is different. So it's very important as an entrepreneur to stay around other entrepreneurs and sharing best practice, problems, how to. A lot of time entrepreneurs think that they are doing something unique and they need to protect themselves. Thinking that they have the greatest idea and the speed in which we are doing is the only real receipt. It's not true. Staying with other entrepreneurs, try to share knowledge, try to understand together and learn from others is the single most valuable element that you can do when you're growing a new company.
Well, I hope this podcast will also help in that same sense for anybody that's listening, because I do think you're just dropping little nuggets of wisdom here for anybody who cares to pick them up. I'm also curious now that you're talking about your role as an investor, and I'm wondering, has that, through your time as an investor, through your time through the IFF, has that changed the way you've looked at the ed tech sector? Has there kind of been some market shift where you've realized, oh, I was thinking about this only through one side of the coin, and now that I have to flip it over, things have changed?
Yeah, I think sometimes as an entrepreneur, you really feel a lot of, I don't know, I was really in love for one period of our history with microlearning, because you see this technology that with small pills that you can send to your phone, to your Slack, to your tool, and you can train many people across that, no? And at one point, I was really in love. I was trying to think and invest into a company that was doing that sector. When you are seen as an investor, and after some years of being in a sector, you really understand that can be an edge, can be a product, but it's not a company purpose. If it is too small, too narrow, for companies, for big companies, in particular when you want to sell to big companies, you cannot win over the fact that you're doing a super small thing. Because they want to have one platform and one solution for everything. They have a lot of internal politics, a lot of internal problems and so on. You cannot have hundreds of small tools to train your workforce. You need to really try to be having a comprehensive resolution for your problem that goes through few key partners that can support your workforce evolution. And that is something that as an entrepreneur, you're not understanding. You only see the business opportunity. You only see the need, but you're not really thinking as your customer are thinking sometimes. Big companies want simplicity. They prefer to stay with a big supplier, so also the quality is low, just because they have already made all the process of procurement officer, legal officer, and so on. So making partnership with that type of player is more important than try to say, yes, but I have the best solution in the market. Product is very important, but is 30% of the real value that you're selling to customers. 70% is your ability make something simple and easy for them.
That's why I really think your value as a guest is really important on that side, because you really do bring both sides to it. We've had people from the funding side, we've had people from the entrepreneur side, but it's rare to find somebody who can give you kind of that middle ground and say, I've had experience in both and I know what works and what doesn't. So on that note, I want to thank you, David, for our chat. It's been lovely to have you on.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure. So I was number 10. I'm number 150. Let's see the next.
There you go. We'll bring you on every 6 years. We'll have a David episode. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much, David.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.